two village idiots with a love-hate relationship.
See, you got fat.
See, you still look like a 15-year-old girl, but not hot.
Who can't stop arguing over Oklahoma sports.
You know what, man? Why am I still talking to you?
Come on, we were doing good there, man.
It's the Just Okay Sports Podcast.
Sooner Nation, Thunder Nation, we are back. This is the Just Okay Sports Podcast. That is Just Oklahoma Sports and Just an Okay Podcast. We are not insiders. We are not reporters. We are not journalists. We're not even very educated, but we do love sports and we like to pretend like we know something about them. So that's what we do here at this podcast. There are no subscriptions. There is no paywall. There is no sending us your cash for information. This is simply a place for all of us to have conversation about Oklahoma sports. So that's who we are. Hope you'll join the ride. Troy is already just not liking my intro today. So Troy,
it's
how are
so
you?
Long. Why is it so long? It's such a long intro. I'm fine. Who is the most educated of this of us three?
Ooh. It's not me. It's between you and Jared.
No, it's 100%. It's you.
It's you.
You have a master's.
Master's in divinity,
that
doesn't, right?
That means nothing. That like.
What do you mean that means nothing? That means
nothing.
A lot.
Yeah, I was like, what? Yeah, that's literally the. Yeah, what? You have 2 years.
You lead a congregation of people because you have a master's. We had back and forth. Dude, for Look, years, you're like, I would love to lead a church, but I haven't gotten through my seminary yet.
Yeah, but there's also like the Goodwill Hunting side of it where he doesn't have any degrees and yet he's the smartest guy in the room. He was the most educated.
That's a different question, right?
Hang on. That's the difference between being educated and being intelligent.
Yes. Thank you.
Clearly, he says, I've read all the same books you have. Therefore, I am educated on all the same things you are. I just have a better brain to figure out what I actually think is right and wrong.
Okay, if we're going off intelligence, then it's 100% me and Troy, and you're exhibiting why currently. But I don't even
question.
Know.
We can't even get out of the gate of the first question and start arguing.
Oh yeah. My gosh. Oh my gosh. Anyway,
right, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah, you guys watch the Thunder game tonight?
How?
Church. Yeah, I was at church.
That's fine.
I don't think it was televised down here. I don't know if it was on ESPN. I'm not gonna pay.
You can have my login, my Bally Sports login.
I did walk into the house using. My wife was watching the game, Troy. If that makes you feel better, she's been under the weather.
Who does?
And she used your Bally in login to watch the game tonight and destroy the Spurs by 50.
So Troy. If you graciously send me the login, maybe for next season. I don't really need it until then.
Next season's going to Amazon, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, that is true. But Daryl, I've sent Daryl like 5 of my logins, and he won't use them. And then he complains, like, well, I don't have a way to watch it. And then I constantly remind him. He's got, like, I swear, you're 45, and he's already got Alzheimer's. Anyway, are you, either of you watching the Masters going on? Like, the Masters is this week.
Oh yeah, that's tomorrow. I'll wait.
I actually watched a par 3 challenge today. There was a guy that hit did you see the guy that hit? I remember who it was. He hit it in the water on the first shot, hits a second shot, and literally drills it in the hole. Like it didn't even bounce. It just went straight in the cup.
That's amazing.
I was like, not only would you be pumped, but you would be so mad. You're like, I hit a hole in one, but it counts. It goes on the card as a 3.
We have to be careful. We have to be careful with talking about the Masters because Daryl's a little salty at like tiebreakers at the moment. Sorry, that is a fantasy football soft spot at the moment.
Me and another guy, Jared, you ready for this? Not only did me and another guy pick our brackets to like we scored the same based on our picks, the tiebreaker was you pick, you know, the total score of the finals game. Mm-hmm. I picked 121. He picked 149. The score was 135. So there was 14 points difference for both of us exactly. So it was a total tie across the board. So then the question was, because it's for extra money, extra salary cap room in our auction draft,
And so then it was, well, what do we do with this? And of course, the league voted to split the money between the two of us as opposed to both of us get the money. So that's how that went down. So anyways, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
I still have more money than Troy. So that's all that matters.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited about the Masters. By the way, Troy, speaking of another thing, Masters is always fun to watch. Are you going to watch the Fallout series? It came out a couple hours ago.
I was on the fence on it until the reviews dropped this morning. And their reviews are like, it's as good as The Last of Us adaptation or whatever. And that everybody said, hey, it's freaking amazing. So as soon as we get off this, if my wife is asleep on the couch, which is 50-50 shot, I'll turn on Fallout.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. And Shogun's been really good, so lots of stuff to watch,
dude,
this weekend.
Dude, okay, so I gotta say something. Like, my son is into baseball now, hardcore. He's trying to get better. So we both could lose some weight, right? Let's just call it how it is. And so we are doing push-ups and sit-up every morning and every night right now. My whole body is sore. My stomach is like just... And I've only been doing it for 3 days, y'all. I am fat as poop. Like, it is really bad. Like, I'm so out of shape.
Dude, he's like, as what do I want to compare myself to here? Okay, poop.
Well, I it's a family friendly show, and I almost said something else. So,
I had to do a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago. I don't know. I did a deal for stream where I had like did so much or whatever, I'd have to do a push-up or whatever, and it added up. I had to do, like, 250 push-ups in, like, less than 24 hours. Bro, I was, like...
That's rough.
I'm telling you, like, my chest just felt like somebody... I don't even know. I just beat the crap out of me. Like, I just getting driven over repeatedly by a truck. It hurt so... Like, I couldn't the next day. I was just, like, this all day, just straight-armed, like, didn't want to move my chest... You know, so yeah, I feel it. So I need to get back into that though. So,
well, here's my shameless brag. So Tal and I are working out together 4 nights a week as well. My son, my middle son, that is. And so we did chest and back on Monday, and we did arms and shoulders on Tuesday, and we end our workouts with doing sprints. We have about a 40 to 50 yard stretch of street over here that ends on a cul-de-sac. So we go over there and do sprints. My son is yet to beat me on a sprint, and it feels so good. And the other night, I buried him in the ground on the last one because he was so sore from the night before. And he's like, literally, we got done. He's like, hey, good workout, Dad. I was like, thanks. And he's like, hey, you still got it a little bit for an old man. It's like, yes, yes. So... that's my deal. Now, speaking of speed and working out, there are athletes across the country constantly running, working out, and trying to earn the right to play college football. And three of them have chosen to play for the Sooners in the last week. So Saturday, we had Marcus Wimberly pick OU. Tonight and today, we had Trent Wilson and Malik Hawkins both join the Sooner squad. Let's start with Marcus Wimberly. He is from the state of Arkansas. 6'1", 200-pound safety / linebacker. We'll talk about that in a little bit in a minute. Now, here's the deal. This is a Brent Venables special. White guy, if you watch his tape, there's violence everywhere, whether he's on offense or defense. There's violence all over the place. Depending on what service you look at, he's a 3- to 4-star kind of guy. But here's the thing. He went to a Under Armour camp in not too long ago, ran a 4.48 and had a 33-inch or higher vertical on the day. So this dude can run. And I also learned something today, got to listen to a podcast at lunch interviewing him about it. Guys, a year ago, this dude was 165 pounds, less than a year ago. And now he's up over 200 pounds, and he's still running a 4.48 at 200 pounds. I like everything about this. I think the question for the Sooners is, will he stay at safety, or will they try to bump him to 220 and slide him down into linebacker a little bit like they did with Jaron Kanick? So, Jared, I know you got to watch a little bit of his tape. Thoughts on Mr. Wimberly coming into the fold for the Sooners?
Yeah, you know, I think a big thing that they've talked like that you've noticed when you watch this film is like he's, like you said, very violent. And like this, the defense they run is he plays like that, like they almost bring him down as like a, I don't want to say cheetah, but they bring him down. Like he plays kind of like a low safety a lot.
Like a so rover, kind of, is like kind that, of almost like a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, he's like that. He plays like one of those weird, like hybrid safety slash linebacker kind of role anyway. So yeah, I really like what I watch this film. I believe, wasn't he committed to Arkansas? Didn't we talk about this? I believe he was committed to Arkansas. Yes. Before, I think up until like December or something, whenever there's a, you know, the big shift at Arkansas. Yeah, I like his speed. I mean, that's the other thing is he's got that step that you just like, you can't coach. You know what I mean? Like there's just, you can watch on some of those plays where when he fires off, it's kind of like the Kip Lewis thing of like when Kip fires off, it's instinctual and his just step is so quick. Like he is at full speed in about two strides, it feels like. So just love what I see. So I think he's a guy that will climb the rankings. Like you said, adding the weight on that he's added, I think throughout a senior season, if he keeps producing and stays healthy and all those things, I don't know how he's not a much higher rated guy.
Awesome. Troy, have you get a chance to watch any of his tape?
No, I haven't. Not at all.
Not at all. So that's awesome. The other thing that I find interesting with him that I like, and you notice with this staff a lot, when you watch his tape, he starts at, I believe it's at quarterback playing like a wildcat on the first play. Then he's right at wide receiver, the one I told y'all to watch, the number two play. He just annihilates a guy, but he's playing slot wide receiver and blocking and just kills a man. Like, then he's playing safety. Then he's playing running back. I mean, he is playing every position on the field. And one of the things that I like about that is it shows his ability to truly know every single position and the entire playbook. And so when you translate that to college where they're going to really lock you in at a position, whatever that is, I feel like that ceiling is much higher at that point with guys like that. And we've seen that with Lewis Carter, who's starting to show out. Jaron Kanick was that way. And I think we all agree, while Jaron had a rough start to the season, you saw him starting to get better and better and better as the year went on last year. And so I love these kinds of guys that they're bringing in. Now, what's going to be interesting is they are also in on another safety from the state of Arkansas, and they're also in on Jonah Williams, who's a five-star safety in the class. Now, if they take both of those guys, one of those three is going to be moving to linebacker, and they're all big guys. They're all over 6 foot. They're all around the 200 to 210 mark. So it'll be interesting to just kind of watch. And by the way, I forgot to mention as well, Wimberly, while he is a three-star, and while he's also in one of the lowest classes of football in Arkansas, he held offers from Utah, Tennessee, Michigan, Oregon, Wisconsin, and Alabama. So those are all schools that know defense. So I feel like this is a really good get for this coaching staff. And Brandon Hall just continues to add to the room. And then earlier today, this morning, Malik Hawkins, the brother of Mike Hawkins, a 6 foot, 180-pound cornerback, committed to Oklahoma. He is considered the 53rd corner and 540th overall nationally, which none of those numbers I know sound great. Here's what I like about him. His footwork is incredible, which also shows he comes from good DNA, and we know that. His dad was a safety at OU for 4 years and even had a small cup of coffee in the NFL. So he's going to know the position well. He's going to be coached up on those things well, and you can't coach length. I haven't had a chance to just study up and down his tape, but I don't think this was a big surprise with his brother being there, him being a legacy. He knows the ins and outs of this program, but I do think that there's a good upside there. So
I did see a quote that said that he was Texas for the longest time.
They also said that about Eli Bowen. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, maybe before his brother came and he got to be around it more, maybe that's the case, but I feel like it's been an OU deal for well over a year, and it's been more so him taking visits and those kinds of things. But
I think with Brent Venables, you're going to see a lot more of the legacy thing, and you're going to see a lot more. I mean, who was the kid who was a couple years ago that ended up was committed to OU but then flipped to Oklahoma State because of his brother and all that? I cannot think of his name now.
Yeah, but, I can't either.
But regardless, you know, like everybody was talking about how his brother wasn't nearly as good and all those sorts of things. I don't think you're going to see that sort of level of thing. But like with this, it's like I think that the culture they built again, I say this like every pod, is conducive to bringing in kids that have, like, if you bring in Michael Hawkins, you're going to have that culture that is going to pull a guy like Malik Hawkins in because of family and everything. You know, that's what they've talked about. And that's what, I don't remember what pod, or there's a podcast I was watching. They were talking about, like, was it the Jaden Davis one maybe or something? But there was one, there was a former player that was talking about how when he met Brent Venables, he was like, dude, he's like, he met my family. And he's like, I was already there. And like, my family loved him. Mm-hmm. Like, and he made a point that the family loved him. And that's how he is with everybody, is he builds those connections with family. So it's cool to see that, you know, you got Malik and Michael both coming to OU. So
yeah. I'm starting to see a trend in some of these recruits, and what they're saying is, all right, when you see a recruit, you know, they commit to Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, right? Usually what we hear is, oh, they put guys in the NFL. Or I want to win a national championship, right? What are we hearing with all these commits for OU? It's like, that's the culture I want to be around. That's the type of, like, camaraderie or, you know, collaborative work effort, ethics, you know, culture. Like, that. It's always about the culture and what they've built so far.
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, that was even Wimberly, his tweet was very, I mean, I don't remember what it specifically was, but he said it's like, it's all about the culture. I mean, he literally, that was his tweet. And I even saw some people saying that it was a shot at Arkansas. And I don't really think so. I just think that that's back to what you're saying, Troy.
That's not a shot. I don't think that's a shot to anybody. I think everybody's got their own culture, right? And some are more conducive for certain people and not. But I mean, what we know about their culture is it's hard work. It's higher standards, right? And it's respect, right? You're going to respect your teammates. You're going to respect the game. You respect your coaches, your family, people that you come across. Like, all of that is incumbent on what this culture is for the team.
Two things to that, Troy. One, yes, you hear about that. And within that culture conversation, the one thing that we continue to talk about, and I know it's been lost in the shuffle of NIL, but the sole mission program that Venables has there gets brought up constantly by these recruits. They all talk about it and how this is the one school that is doing things to truly invest in us as a person outside the game of football, right? And even the sole mission is a part of football, right? Like, there is counseling, for instance, is a part of the sole mission. So when you are overwhelmed with anxiety and pressure and all the things because of this sport, we want to teach you how to deal with that. But that is something that translates outside of football, right? The internships, the service, all that stuff. The other thing, this was actually brought up on another podcast. I can't remember who, but think about this, guys. When under BV, when's the last time that we've had a major issue off the field?
That's a great point. That's part of this. Like, you're not hearing about it. If you are, it's they're keeping it in-house, right?
Well, what? Jaleel Farouk didn't show up to a speeding ticket court date or something like that. So technically they put a arrest warrant out for him because he didn't pay a speeding ticket. Like, and again, that's still not a great look, but come on, man. Like, we ain't got Georgia issues with DUI after DUI after DUI with 180 miles an hour through residential neighborhoods over and over and over again. Like, we don't have people pistol whipping people for marijuana. We don't have any of the, like, there has not been a major off the field issue under Brent.
Didn't when Tavondre Sweat got arrested. So, I mean,
and did you see that whole deal? They didn't even get to actually give him a true test, like a breath test.
Yeah, it was like 3 hours.
4 hours after he was arrested, he still was 25% over the limit.
Yeah.
Like,
hey, speaking of former former Georgia players. Do we want Bear Alexander in the
no?
Okay. And he's also staying now.
Yeah, he's also
he's staying now.
Now he's randomly staying at USC. I wonder.
Oh, he just got a cool million in his pocket.
Yeah, let's say he's got a cool million. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
You know, I just realized Caleb's not on payroll anymore. I'm gonna hit the portal. Oh no. Oh, we're good. I can stay. Okay, great. Yeah. Which, by the way, I didn't realize. Did you know that he played at four high schools in his 4 years?
No, that's crazy.
And he's played it. It was about to play at his third college in 3 years in college. Like,
imagine trying to stay on an NFL team.
Oh my god,
hilarious!
Like, just wild. Couple other things on recruiting. Sorry, we got sidetracked. Team ranking wise, 247 has us at sixth. Rivals has us at fourth. On three has us at 11th. So, seems like a big gap with On three, but even so, you're looking at a top 10 class. Great news. And we should also mention that OU is scheduled to host. And I forgot to write his name in here. I'm so sorry. The starting center from SMU that is going to be entering the transfer portal, I believe, is visiting for the spring game. And so is Joseph Blighty, who is a 295 interior defensive lineman from Indiana. So both of those guys are scheduled to visit, although Blighty just changed his schedule and is visiting LSU before us. So I don't feel great about that because we know there's plenty of NIL money and stuff to entice there. We'll see what happens. But even so, just really, really good stuff recruiting-wise going for the Sooners. Again, they continue to do very well in that vein. Troy, very quickly, on the recruiting front, Jared had a question that I thought was good that I think we should attack just very quickly. So here's the thought. It was Nick Saban was the GOAT, I think we could all say, right? Like, that was the school when he was the head coach. Whether you had a guy committed or not, if Alabama offered, you were kind of like, we're kind of screwed here. Like, this is not going our way. I would say a very close, like 1A, 1B to him was Kirby Smart, and maybe was even starting to take over that mantle a little bit here the last year or two. And I think currently Kirby Smart is the guy in college football with no Nick Saban. Who is it after that? Like, who is the school right now that you just do not want to contend with if you remove Kirby Smart? I think it was Saban and Kirby. Is that a fair way to ask it, Jared? Am I saying it the right way?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna say I think it's, I mean, right now it's Georgia. I agree with you there. I'd still say Bama is right there. Just because of the school more so than the coach. But I'd probably say Ryan Day.
Okay. Fair. Jared, what are you thinking?
Yeah, see, the way that this came up was, I feel like Saban became so synonymous. Not to say that Alabama didn't have success before Saban, but Saban elevated them so quickly and so high that they're just so synonymous with each other that if you take them apart, with Saban gone, even though he still has like an off the field role or whatever, without him at the helm, it's like Tom Brady and the Patriots, right? Like, the Patriots have not been the same since Tom Brady left. I would agree, probably Ryan Day, and then I guess just to go a different one, Dan Lanning. I know that he doesn't have as large of a resume or long, I guess, or whatever at Oregon, but the dude just finds ways to get recruits. And I think that if you really look, if you take a step back and look at what Oregon was before he got there, not to say it was a complete dumpster fire, but it was definitely not on an upward trend. At most, it was plateaued. And now they're very much a team that when you talk about playoff, when you talk about, running the West Coast, they're kind of that school.
Well, NIL.
Yeah. I mean, but that's what I'm saying. You would think Washington, because Washington was just in the national championship game, but it's like,
well,
I still think as a program, you're still looking at Dan Lanning in Oregon.
Yeah. Here's the thing I think that is fascinating, right? I think we could list some guys. I think Ryan Day's up there. I think Dan Lane's up there. But here's the biggest thing. I think BV is in a great position in this. unless Kirby Smart really comes hard after one of the guys you really want, I would say it this way. There's more parity in recruiting right now than there has been in a long time. What has Dan Lanning done at Oregon? I mean, he hasn't won a Pac, what, a Pac-12?
Yeah.
But he hasn't done anything in the playoffs.
All right, let's take away winning, right? Winning. Let's just look at rankings. I just pulled this up. This is wild. Bama, Ohio State, and Georgia. All three of them are in the top four every single year since 2017.
Right.
They are, all three of them are three of the top four every single year. Where every once in a while there's a Clemson, there's an LSU, there's a USC, but those three are by far the three recruiting schools.
Yes.
In the top 10 is always LSU, is always OU, and typically USC.
Yeah. So, but to that point, we don't know what Alabama.
In Texas.
What Alabama without Saban's going to be like, right?
Yeah.
I think you are at a point now with Ryan Day that in the recruiting game, you could go, look, Ryan's great. Ohio State's been great since the start of football, but he hasn't won anything. He hasn't won. Michigan now with no Jim Harbaugh, that changes the game at Michigan completely. You really don't know what USC's going to be moving forward with how bad things went last year and now no Caleb Williams, where that's going to go moving forward for them, right? I mean, you've got so much. You got a new coach at A&M, which I would say the last couple of years, that's another school that you're terrified of because of their resources. But now with a new regime, what? How's that going to work? What's that going to be like? Can he recruit? Can he not recruit there? How's that going to flow? And I mean, there's just been so much turnover and change. I just think that there's a great opportunity for parity right now. And I think Ohio State's still going to be up there. Georgia is still the cream of the crop. After that, I think it's wide open. Well, I mean, Sarkisian, obviously, in Texas is recruited well year in and year out too. LSU is probably, but I don't feel like that any of those schools right now, like, again, other than Georgia, if I know it's coming down to us in Georgia, I'm going to go ahead and chalk that up to a 99.9% chance they're going to Georgia, right?
I'm saying the same thing about Ohio State.
The thing is it's you've got to have success at some point, right? Like, all the schools we're talking about, like Ohio State, really their two down seasons, if you want to say that, were, what, the last 2 years? Because they got beat by Michigan, right? Now they're kind of potentially kind of unchallenged, right?
Do you know who's sitting number one right now in the rankings?
Notre Dame.
Ohio State.
Yeah.
Ohio State.
Well, it depends on what page you're looking at, though, too.
I'm just looking at On3. I'm looking at On3 right now.
So, but here's my point.
Hold on. Let's pause. Daryl, your internet is real bad right now.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Well, great. Let me see what I can do to fix that. My bad, fellas.
So, yeah, my point real quick. I'll talk while you're troubleshooting, even though I'm your tech guy. You know, you have to have some amount of success at some point. I guess my hot take is if Kirby Smart doesn't start getting things under control at Georgia, I could see that potentially going bad. Like you said, we've talked about a number of off-field issues, not only with the players either. That's what's crazy is it's administration as much as it is players that have been busted for wild, wild things. So you kind of start having that it's kind of like we talked about that culture or whatever. If you don't get those things under control, when does it start to fall apart, right? So, yeah, I mean, it is going to be interesting to see. You're going to have success at some point with some of these schools, like in Ohio State. Has kind of already established himself there. You know, like LSU with Brian Kelly, it's like, okay, he's recruiting really well right now, but if he has a couple of seasons, like if next season they only have 7 or 8 wins and then, you know, whatever, if he doesn't really start to really push them to the top of the SEC, is that gonna sustain itself? I mean, like, there's a lot of guys that are so new to their school, we can't tell what the trajectory is because we don't have enough sample size, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And they don't have enough resume there either. So
it'll be fascinating to see how it plays out for sure. Let's go a little bit more in-house to OU really quick. Talk some spring practice. I think one thing is very clear. I think that the staff and the media department really believes that Deion Burks is going to be a player because he was mic'd up this week. He was the guy that was selected to try to do gymnast things with the men's gymnastics team this week. They have him everywhere on their social media, which just matches up with all the rest. I mean, I think that is clear to see with everything that is going on, which is really exciting and a huge get. Now, I want to really focus on defense. We have heard great things about the safeties. We've heard great things about the corners. We've heard really good things about the linebackers. We're even hearing some great things about some of the defensive line, especially the young guys that have come in. And so I want to pose this question to you all. With a new defensive coordinator who, by all accounts, is running the defense in Zach Alley, that is one thing that every single reporter has made note of, taken photos of. Brent Venables is not running the defensive practice. He is not running the linebacker practice. He is coming over, he's giving his 2 cents, and he is moving on. Zach Alley has full control of that defense. And so I've been watching some different podcasts and videos on what kind of defense Zach Alley ran at Jacksonville State, and even watched some tape against, they played South Carolina his last year there. So I wanted to see a little bit of what he did there. Guys, he does everything. I mean, the Brent clone is there because we know that Brent is multiple. He wants to mix everything up. He wants to disguise it all, do all the different things. Dude, in that game alone, he dropped a 4-2-5 defense for a point in time. He ran 3-3-5. He ran 3-2-6 in that game. And you can go watch other games where he even runs a 5-2-4 defense. Now, we all understand that defense in some degree is dictated against who you're playing, right? If you're going to play a hardcore air raid team, you're going to want at least 5 defensive backs out on the field, right? If you're going to play a triple option team, you're probably going to want to go a 4 or 5 man front. But my question to you is this, based on what we are hearing out of spring, based on the depth at different positions, what would you consider the best defensive lineup that OU could put out on the field? We're not talking matchups. We're talking if there is one setup you could put on the field that you believe puts your best players on the field to be successful, what defense would you run? Jared, I will start with you.
It's a tough question. I've got to go like 3. At linebacker, that if you could somehow find a way to squeeze a third linebacker on the field, I don't think that's a negative. We've already kind of talked about that a little bit, but if not that, then I got to go like probably like 4-2-5. But yeah, I'd probably go 3-3-5 is my go-to, I think, if I'm just as a base defense.
Gotcha. Sorry. And you got 3-3-5 out and then you froze on my end. I'm sorry. I think my internet's still being crazy, but your reasoning for that was linebackers that you wanted to get them on the field on the 3-3-5.
Yeah. Like I said, you have such a depth at linebacker. Just squeezing, being able to squeeze another guy out of that room into that and onto the field, I don't see how it's a bad thing.
Yeah, for sure.
For me, this is an easy answer. It's a 3-3-5 with Deshaun McCall as your other linebacker. That's the easy answer for me. You've got. I mean, yeah, defensive line might be question mark. A little bit, not from what we're hearing from spring practice. Although Daryl, you did bring up something when we were having conversations the other day about defensive ends aren't getting much pub right now. But maybe that's just because we know what we have in the defensive ends. They might be good, might still be really good, but we just know what we have, right? But I'm going 3-3-5 with our stud linebackers and Desmond McCullough coming down in the box at times, having going back out and playing coverage as needed. That's the easy answer for me. That's our I'm going to use Daryl's language, death lineup.
I mean, I completely agree with both of you on that front. I think the only thing that I could even see us doing is going to a 3-2-6, to be honest, because I think that they really like, for instance, Kendall Dolby at that what they call their cheetah or nickel position, and he's kind of that tweener between a corner and safety. And so I think if you had a Gentry and like Des Malone out there, and then you have him at that kind of cheetah slash position, you're doing Danny and Kip at your linebackers. Now you could put any combination of Peyton Bowen, Billy Bowman, Woody Washington, RSJ. You could put any of those combinations out there on the field. And for that matter, it depending on what the matchup is, you could even take Kendall Dolby out. And we know that RSJ has been working at cheetah, and we know that Peyton Bowen's been working at cheetah. So you could slide them in there. I think the two deepest positions are linebacker and safety. And so, and look, I don't think we have a clue as to what our defensive end group's going to be at all. I mean, the more I think about that group, I think I left last season believing that that was just going to be this really strong group for us. But I think I was believing that based on that PJ was just going to really break out and become a freak, and that our Mason Thomas would be healthy. But the more that I think on it, it's like our Mason Thomas has never been healthy since he's been here. And even right now, we know that he's already missed two or three practices in spring ball, not from a major injury, but an injury enough to hold him out. And it's like, this is year three, and we're still dealing with injuries. You are not hearing buzz about PJ other than the fact that he looks like he's gained weight and he looks like $1 million in a uniform. You're not hearing that he's going out there and dominating anything. The only guy you hear consistent talk that is making plays at defensive end right now is Ethan Downs. And look, we all like Ethan Downs. He's been an all Big 12 guy. But you know what you have in him, and it's not stardom. It's a guy that's going to bring his lunch pail, play hard every single down, and set the tone. But there's not going to be anything that's just going to change a game with him on the field. The weakest position's defensive end. So when you go to a three-man front, you can play a David Stone kind of at that 3/4 technique, and then Ethan Downs can play more of that outside 5 technique if you need to or whatever it is, and then Jaden Jackson or DJ Terry in the middle, and then you can put all your athletes. And Troy, I'm with you. Thinking about Danny Stutzman, Kip Lewis, and Desmond McCullough all on the field as linebackers is that sounds really fun to me.
I'm changing my answer to your 4-2-6 with Desmond coming down as a linebacker and still popping out if they go spread offense on us.
You can do so much with that look. You can do so much with that because he has trained at cheetah. So he can play that Sam/nickel. And that's the thing with the 3-2-6, the amount of confusion you could cause on offense because you put Desmond out there. Well, is he a linebacker? Is he playing the nickel? I mean, honestly, when you go to that look, he could come up on the line and do the old school striker defense that we used to do where striker literally was just blitzing the quarterback every down. That was his job. He never dropped into coverage. He just wreaked havoc. But you don't know. You don't know if he's going to drop. You don't know if he's coming on the blitz. You don't, like, there is so much chaos you could create with that 3-2-6. And I know that sounds insane, but with the amount of safeties you have and guys you want to get on the field, there's a lot you can do with that.
I thought we were going to have more of an argument on this thing.
I did too. Yeah, I thought for sure you were going four-man front when I first tried to throw this to you the other day. I knew you were.
Well, I thought about it. I thought about it a lot more, and I want some of these boys on the line at the same time. But if we've got our linebackers, I think our linebackers are really good. Yes. I will make this statement. I will make the statement about the defense. I think this will be the best defense that OU has put out on the field since 2003.
It could be.
Jared.
I mean, it's going to come down to the D-line. I mean, honestly.
Give me all the Jaden Jackson stock. Give me all of it.
Here's the thing for me. I think, Troy, that you are right. My doom scenario, though, is this. If this offensive line is as patchwork as it sounds like it is, the fact that the offense is not moving the ball consistently could actually hurt their statistics a ton.
Oh, yeah.
To the point that their talent is that good, but by the third and fourth quarter, they're just burning out and they cannot sustain playing against level stuff because the offense just cannot get things going.
I mean, I think you have to also look at with three down linemen, you're going to have to rotate a little bit more than you. I mean, just because you're playing in the SEC now, right? Like you're just generally your defensive line is going to get a lot more abuse than it would have in the Big 12. So yeah, that's a big question mark, but I'm not going to take the bet on their ranking. Cause I was so right about them being so much improved and then missed on my bet before the bowl game by like, what was it? Like a point, 1 point, I think. So, but Troy got, I don't even remember what I bought. I had to buy him a Steam game, I think. So
yeah,
anyway,
exactly.
I do think they'll be much improved actually. Still, I do think they will be.
Yeah,
I think you made a good point. I think you're going to have to like take the stats and throw them out a little bit because you're in the SEC now. But I just think when you watch them, they're going to be way more talented, way more fundamentally sound, just way better across the board.
And that's the other thing with the three-man front, Jared, to your point, is it allows you to rotate better, right? Because you can take Ethan Downs and put him out there for a whole drive, and then the next drive, you could bring in Nigel Smith, you could bring in PJ or R. Mason Thomas, let them go. Then you can move Jaden Jackson out, bring DJ Terry in. You could bring the other D-tackle who is maybe Devon Sears and now put David Stone in. Like, you could literally do a whole line change, you know, almost three deep right now, I feel like, because you're playing essentially two defensive tackles and then only one defensive end. But if you go four-man front, that can't happen. The linebackers, they're wanting to get Kobe McKenzie on the field. They want Dasan on the field, and they really want Lewis Carter and Sonny Omasego on the field. So even with three linebackers, you've got plenty to back that up. And then at safety, it's the same. I mean, it's Billy Bowman, RSJ, Peyton Bowen for sure. Jaden Hardy is making serious noise at safety as well. You got Woody Washington playing back there. So you got five, six safeties you can play, and corners not much different. You got Kanai, you got Gentry, you got Des Malone, you've still got Makari Vickers out there. I mean, they are loaded in the back seven.
Just put it this way, to put it a simpler way. When was the last time OU could legitimately say that they were, especially on the defensive side of the ball, so deep that they're struggling to get people on the field? It used to be like, I mean, think about it. Like, when was the last time we weren't like, oh, if so-and-so goes down, we're just totally screwed. We have nobody to fill in.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had that for 10 years.
And now it's
the other problem where it's like, now you're having to find ways to get the guys on the field so they don't transfer out or something because you've got so many good guys.
Yeah. And that's the problem you need to have. That's the problem you need to have. Which, by the way, another quick report that came in the other day, Lewis Carter in the scrimmage the other day. How was it said? It didn't look like he made some incredible like blow up tackle, but at least three or four times, what seems like a routine tackle, the person who he hit stayed there for quite a while trying to find out if they were okay or not before they got up. I mean, I love it. I just love everything that this defense has coming. And I'm with you, Troy. If the offense can find any rhythm at all, yes, it's the best defense in 2003. There's no reason for this defense not to be that good. So now let's move into Troy's real passion. The Thunder Basketball Association team of OKC is fully healthy, rocking and rolling. Shea's dropping 40 the next night. Chet's getting to watch Wimby's team be beat by 50, which granted they didn't play anybody that I don't think anyone in the world knows, but we still beat them by 50. This team is guaranteed a top three seed. I mean, wow. And last night's game against the Kings, man, to be down 20 and come back and win that game was just an incredible, incredible feat. How do you feel about this squad going into the playoffs, Troy?
So last night I was watching the game with my oldest, and he had to go to bed at halftime. And he goes, "Dad, we're going to lose this game." And give him credit, man. Like, they were on a heater in the first half. Like, yeah. They were on a heater. De'Aaron Fox could not miss from three.
Or the Ellis was like, guy.
Just yeah, Keon Ellis had a game of his life. And so, like, I was just like, just this is what the Thunder do. If a team gets on a heater, 9 times out of 10, they come off that heater eventually. And when they do, the Thunder don't stop what they're doing. They're consistent in what they do. And the thing that they do, they keep at this level. But what happens sometimes is when that heater comes off, then they go up here and their level elevates. And so when they come off that heater, then they're just completely shocked. What do we do now? And the Thunder just come at you in waves. That's what they did to the Spurs tonight. Dude, when they just go downhill, when Josh Giddey is just going downhill and he knows he is better than his dude, like, it's, I feel bad for the other team. Like, tonight, I felt bad for him. He scored 11 points in the first quarter, 13 points in the first quarter, the Spurs did without Wimby. Just terrible. But, man, I told this to my kids and my wife when the Thunder playoffs start in like, what, 9 or 10 days?
Yeah.
I said, "You don't have a husband. You don't have a father. I'm gone. Like, you want to watch the game with me? Let's do this. But I am not the person that you currently know." Like, it is. And I will say the same thing. If OU gets in a national championship game, I will say the same thing. You can watch with me. Love to have that experience with you. But I'm not your dad. I'm not your father.
God. So bad. So, so bad. Oh,
my wife just gave me a look, dude. Like, what do you want me to say? I love you, but
I mean, this is happening. Troy, I'm 100% with you to look at the family and go, "Look, guys, playoff games are on. They're on the TV, and I'm watching them." But you went a little
I took another step, or four.
Babe, you're divorced. I'm divorcing you. If they get to the playoffs, I'm gone. And children, you're up for adoption because I've got better things to do with my life. That's just great. So goodness. Jared, how are you going to feel about having to stay up to watch the tip at like a 10 p.m. game on the East Coast of Oklahoma City Thunder basketball?
I mean, it's fine. I'm excited to finally get to watch them because like they've had like 3 games all season televised, here at least. So yeah, I mean, I do feel good though. I mean, they're looking more and more like they're going to get a good matchup. And I think like you said, Troy, like this is kind of what I said like a couple weeks ago, maybe even further, where I was like, now they're getting to that point where they're turning all those dials, like dialing in. And getting in that mindset, like you said, they didn't blink when they played, when they've been down in games. They've taken adversity in the games as it's come. And then, like tonight, when they're playing San Antonio, of course, San Antonio set Wimby and a couple of their other guys or whatever. It's like they just went out and did dominated. Like they just literally, like, I don't even think, like, looking at the stat sheet, it's like, I don't even think, like, it felt like the Thunder really just kind of beginning to end dominated. And the score sheet doesn't even show how much so, but I'm excited. Yeah, I mean, like, again, I keep saying it. 2 years ago, the black eye of the league, and now you're fighting for the top spot in the West. I mean,
that dude from Charlotte will never live that statement down, ever. Like,
yeah.
Calling the Thunder the black eye of the league for trying to get a lottery pick when teams like freaking Philly did that for like five straight years trying to build the roster that they have now. Charlotte cannot get out of their own way who he writes for. It's just, oh, it's great. It is just great. Troy, here's another question for both of you.
Can we take a moment and...
I'm sorry. No, go ahead. Yes, we can take a moment.
Sorry. I think you're lagging.
Yeah, he's lagging. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for the internet issues tonight, everyone. I apologize.
It's not like he has fiber or anything. Anyways, go ahead, Troy.
No, I was just going to say, can we just take a moment and just recognize the greatness of SGA?
Oh, dude.
Dude, so.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the crazy thing. Like, people are talking, I've told you guys this, living on the East Coast now, a lot of people I know are Heat fans and, you know, even like New York Knicks and Philly and all these other that are friends of East Coast teams or Eastern Division or Eastern Conference teams. And they've all basically said they will cheer for the Thunder because they're so fun to watch all the way until the finals, unless their team meets them in the finals somehow. Like, I even had somebody that's a Boston fan tell me that. Like, they're like, SGA and Chet are so much fun to watch that that's their second team.
55 wins, y'all, after a night.
Jared called it. Jared called it.
Not only did I say it, I said they will not just win 50, they'll win more than 50.
You did.
Yeah.
You did. You were very...
55 and 25.
It was an impressive deal. What I'm really curious about is this. I really hope that as we get to host playoff games for the first time in a long, long time in Oklahoma City, I hope the true nature of Loud City comes back out.
Like, bro, it's happening. It is going to happen. I'll tell you this right now. It is going to bust.
It better. It, like, that is something I take a lot of pride in, and it's dumb. It is so dumb, but I take great pride in those playoff games when the announcers are like, my Lord, like, this is insane. Like, we can't hear, the players can't hear, like, this is a tough, tough play. And even the players used to talk about it. And unfortunately, the last time we actually even when they had an opportunity to have home playoff games was 2020 when everything was in lockdown and in the stupid bubble. And I don't know, man. I guess my fear is though that we've done this for so long now and we've made these runs. And I think no one really believes that this team could win it all. I think everybody thinks that this is a good team that will make a good showing in the playoffs, but I don't think anyone expects us to win it. And I'm afraid it's just going to take the edge off. Whereas those years with Russ and KD, the first time was the first time, so it was insane. And then after that, we all really believed we could win it. Like, we all really believed they could make a run and win the championship, which made us rabid. And I don't know that anyone really believes that with this team.
Yeah, but I also think you can't discount the fact that everybody's been yearning for a playoff run. Yep. From this team for how many years? Like, we haven't had a postseason. We haven't sniffed the postseason in how long?
Four years.
Yeah. So
I'm with you, Jared, but you can feel it. You can feel it in the games. Watching the tickets, we talk about it after the game. J-Dub is talking about it after the game. It was like, man, that was crazy in there tonight. It's building. It's been building over the last month and a half to 2 months. More people are in there, and they're getting pumped more and more with each play and each game. I'm telling you right now, that first game is going to be lit. It is going to be incredible.
I there's a part of me that really wants to go to that one because the best decision I've maybe – well, maybe not the best, but maybe the second best. Second best sports decision I've ever made – was I bought playoff tickets to the very first home game that the Thunder ever had against the Lakers that year. So it was game 3, I think, of the series. Dude, that place was unhinged. the insanity in that place was crazy. And then to pull off the win was just even crazier because no one expected us to win that series, and we obviously didn't. But still, just the excitement for it was awesome. Here's my last thing. Jared, I'll ask you first. What will it take?
Okay.
What do we have to do as OKC Thunder fans to get Thunder Alley to return to a Thunder game?
Nothing. I mean, I think you're going to have it. I mean, I don't know.
I don't think they'll do it personally. Troy, you think that they would bring Thunder Alley back?
I think some form of it maybe one day, but it's not going to be to what we remember, you know, what it was before.
These other cities are doing it. Like the Toronto did it a few years ago with Kawhi. Milwaukee did it. Like, I just hate that we started that trend in the NBA, and then something that happens a mile and a half down the road has impacted it to go away, because it was one of the coolest scenes in sports, was seeing that whole area just packed with fans watching the game and losing their minds outside the stadium. I don't know, man. Like, maybe this can start the trend on Twitter for them to bring it back. I don't know.
I would love for them to bring it back, but I'm more excited. You know, I'm so excited for these playoffs, especially in the West. The West is going to be fascinating. I could give a rat's derriere about the play-in tournament in the East, but the play-in for the West is going to be awesome.
Yes.
It is going to be awesome. I cannot wait. Yeah, because here's the thing. There's five teams still vying. Well, really, Phoenix, the Pelicans, and kind of the Kings are still vying for the sixth seed. I think the Pelicans are going to get the sixth seed. But it's still fascinating. Dallas has moved their way up from stuck in no man's land with play-in. Now they're the five seed. And they could be the four seed.
That's wild.
They've been playing fantastic.
Yeah. They're going to be a tough
matchup. I don't think SGA is going to win the MVP. I think there's some groundswell for him, but I think he's going to come in second or third.
You think Luka's going to take it?
No, I think Jokic is going to get it again personally. If the Nuggets end up winning the West, like getting first in the regular season standings, I think Jokic takes it.
Dang it. Well, I'm still betting SGA wins it. I think there's enough people on his bandwagon to push it through.
Do you know what Jokic is averaging this year?
Oh, it's dumb. Don't get me wrong. I mean, if I was a Denver fan, I'd be screaming at this podcast saying Jokic is the MVP. I understand
26 and a half, 12, nearly 12 and a half boards a game, 9 assists a game, 1.3 steals, almost a block a game on shooting splits that are fantastic, except for his 3-pointing, which is only 35%. But yes.
Yes.
He's and having just a stupid season.
It is. And here's the only reason I give the edge to SGA, right, is I feel like for the position he plays, his defensive numbers are better because he's averaging almost a block a game as a point guard. And he's leading the league in steals. So defensively, he's higher. And again, the second youngest team in all the NBA, he has on the doorstep of winning the West, whereas Jokic is on a NBA championship team. Like, that would be the differentiator for me.
Here's a dude that's not getting talked about enough. Giannis is having a better year than when he won the MVP.
Yes, but his team is not.
His team is not. He's averaging 30, 11 and a half, 6.5, 1.2 steals, 1.1 blocks.
And I would argue that the East is not as strong this year as when he won the MVP. That was a year where the East was deep. And that's the thing I think that's hurting him.
Yeah, the East is top. The East is very top heavy.
No doubt about it.
There's one team. I'm sorry. I don't even think the Bucks have a shot of beating the Celtics.
The Philly's the only team. Philly's the only team I give even
if they're
half a
if
shot.
They're healthy.
If they're healthy, right? Yes. Yes.
The problem is they have to. If they get out of the play-in, if they get out of the play-in, they'll be the seven. Let's say they're the seven seed. They have to play the Bucks. I don't think they're going to beat the Bucks in seven.
I think they could.
The problem is Maxie's not fully healthy, but neither is Giannis. Giannis just went down yesterday,
right?
With an ankle.
They're saying a calf strain, but man, I don't know. I don't know about that. That looked a lot worse than a calf strain to me.
I'm calling it. I'm gonna say Celtics Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to say. We'll do our predictions for the NBA later on.
Yeah, next week. But next week we'll do our all that stuff.
Preliminary, I think the Suns and the Lakers get out of the play-in.
Oh, yeah. I think those are solid picks. Those are solid picks. Speaking of other basketball, let's talk a little college basketball for a second. Arkansas got a new coach, guys. Did y'all see that one coming on your bingo card this week? Good Lord.
No, that was...
Tyson Chicken and Walmart must have written a big check, because apparently the report today came out that Calipari went back to Kentucky and said, hey, if you match this, I'll stay. And they said, we're good.
But I think a little bit of it is he kind of was like, he's kind of a victim of his own success in that way, right? Where they were so dominant for what was like 4 years, where they were like literally, there was like four, it was like 3 to 4 years. Kentucky was the team in college basketball. Yeah. And now anything that if he doesn't match that, then he's not meeting expectations.
Kentucky is the most insane expectation college basketball program I think that there is. I mean that I the pressure at that place is through the roof. And somebody said it really well today on local radio. This almost really feels like a win-win for everybody, you know, to a degree. Like Calipari gets to go to a place that he likes, gets to restart, kind of get things going again. Kentucky gets to do the same. They're kind of frustrated with him, but it's not to the point where they like want him gone. But the fact that he's leaving, they're kind of like, well, okay, you know, go do your thing. And we're not upset about it. We can kind of let you go with your flowers. So it's kind of hopefully a win-win all the way around. We'll see in 2 or 3 years if that's how it actually plays out. But it feels that way a little bit. And Jared, you mentioned it is Masters week, so I do have to get from each of you, who is winning the Masters? Troy, you're the real deal golf man here. Who's winning the Masters?
Scottie Scheffler. I know that's a easy pick.
It's
but
such a boring pick.
I get it, but the dude is by far the best ball striker on tour. He is the most accurate dude on tour. If he's hitting some putts, I think he runs away with the Masters.
Wow. Jared?
I'm going to go, man, this is going to probably make, I don't know, make both of you mad. I'm going to go Ricky Fowler. I know he won the par three.
There's no way.
There's no, hang on. He won the par three contest today, right? Which there's the par three contest curse or whatever.
Right.
But if Ricky was going to win it, it'd be like Ricky would win it in that scenario. So it's a flyer pick, but that's my bet. I'm just like,
look out for Wyndham Clark. Look out for Wyndham Clark.
Yeah.
Wyndham Clark. He says Wyndham Clark. Okay. So I have to go someone, not Scottie Scheffler.
I also like Kepka. I'll throw Kepka as my alternate.
Kepka, I hate that dude with such a passion. Like, I hate that dude.
I don't like him, but dude, he is a gamer when it is big time. Like, you can't deny that.
But anyway,
all right, I am going to go.
Daryl, if you go back and watch this podcast, you're going to hate this.
I know.
You're going to hate this podcast.
It's actually much better on my end than it is on y'all. So I think we're going to be okay. But I'm going to go John Rahm back to back. He does it again.
Okay.
That's what I'm going. So
can we get to my fun segment now? Can we get to my fun?
Yes,
fun
it segment? Is. It's your turn.
Let's wrap this baby up with Troy's.
All right.
It's the return. It's the return.
We're bringing back one of my favorite segments that we used to do. Top five. We're bringing back a top five. We're not going to go around because it'll take way too long like we used to. Okay? We're just going to go top five. Each of us say our list. So, today's top five is your top five action movie scenes of all time. Doesn't have to be the best or the technically the greatest, just your favorite
the one we enjoyed the most
of all time. Yes. 100%. 100%. So, who would like to kick us off? Anybody want to throw out some mentions before we get into the list?
Oh, some honorable mentions that didn't make it in there? That's what you're asking
for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You actually mentioned one earlier that did make my honorable mention, which was Helm's Deep. Just the whole fight scene of Helm's Deep. That was an honorable mention for me. I tried to figure out like how to put it in there, but it didn't make the mark. But still, like, one of my favorite moments is in the Bourne series when he's on the phone talking to them and he says, "I swear to you, if I even so much as feel you behind me, I will come at you so hard and so fast, like you will not know what's just happened." Like, that whole, like, him just throwing down on the U.S. government is just incredible, but it did not crack my top five.
Here's an honorable mention that's, like, I don't think either of you will have it on your radar, but I really enjoyed the movie. And it's, like, kind of the whole movie, 1917. Like, even the scene where he's running through, you've not seen it, it's a World War One movie, mm-hmm. and it was one that was shot where there's no cuts in the movie. Like, it's a...
Yes, that was a... Who was the director? What was that?
I don't remember his name.
Is that a Nolan joint?
No.
That was Dunkirk.
Sam Mendes.
That was Dunkirk.
Sam Mendes.
1917 was great, man.
Yeah, was really good. Like, the scene where he's, like, running across, like, he's running... Yeah. Perpendicular to everybody, and like they even said, like, him getting run over was like not planned or in the cut, like it just happened, so they kept rolling. So anyways, really good, really, really good movie.
One of my honorable mentions might be in your top fives is the Heat bank robbery shootout.
That's a good one.
It's not,
it is not my top five, but that's really
it
good.
Is a great scene. It's so good.
Heat is such a good movie too. Heat is such a good movie.
Yes.
Heat is so, and another one is the Captain America Winter Soldier elevator fight scene.
That is so in my top five.
Let's start with you, Daryl. Let's start with your five. Go. start with five and go all the way to one.
Okay, my number five. I've mixed it up several times, but my number five is Gladiator, and I don't know how you want to put it, but it's the when they're in Rome, and it's his first fight with his helmet on, and they defeat, you know, the barbarian horde, right? Like, and it's not supposed to go that way, and they do, and then when he takes the mask off, and he says, "Father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance in this life or the next." Like, that whole build to that moment. Holy crap, dude. Like, I just, and then the crowd just starts live, live, live. And it's just like, he is so pissed, and he is literally just taking control of Rome with one gladiator fight is freaking epic.
Okay, you're number four.
Oh, sorry. My number four is the tasting scene of John Wick. When he schedules a tasting and he goes in and he's like, "Appetizer." And he's like, "Ah, appetizer." And like goes through and like gives all the descriptions and does all
things. That's not an action scene. That's not an actual action scene.
But when you combine it with his scene of going through the catacombs with everything that guy put together for him, it's incredible. Like, you put the scene of the tasting combined with him going through and killing, you know, one of the head table members and going through the catacombs and surviving, especially when he gets to the shotgun, because he's like, "Something strong, robust." And he's like, "Strong. Robust. Ah, the Benelli 12 gauge, semi-automatic, carbon fiber stock." And he's like, "Oh, I just love the combination of all that's incredible for me."
All right, your number three.
My number three. I'm going to probably get roasted by my brother for this, but it is the scene in Top Gun Maverick, the new one, when they have outcasted him, that he's no longer the instructor, and then all of a sudden they're just sitting in the room and he says, course open, and they go, yes, and then he runs it, and then he gets to, he's like, you have probably just destroyed a $30 million or $30 billion plane because it can't fly anymore because you just pushed it beyond its limit, but you're team leader. Like, that is just, love it. Love that whole scene. That is my three. Two. Do I really want to go here? That's the question. Yeah, I do. My number two is the elevator scene in Captain America Winter Soldier. That whole, does anybody want to get out? And him just taking them all and leaping out of the elevator, knowing that he'll heal after he hits the ground. Absolutely epic is my two. And my number one will always be my favorite action scene for probably as long as I live. The Matrix coming through the metal detector. And after they have told him to remove all the items, and he just throws open the trench coat and just goes nuts on everybody. Just, yeah, absolutely epic. That is my favorite of all time.
Jared, that's a good five. Jared, you're up.
Okay, so I went because I knew Daryl was going to pick a couple of those. So I did go a little bit different. So I picked some different ones because a lot of those would have been in my top five. But my number five, I'm going to go, ironically, not my favorite World War II movie, and probably a little bit of a cliche pick, but I'm going to go Saving Private Ryan D-Day because it just was so realistic.
You're talking
so,
about the Normandy beach scene?
Yeah, yeah. Just the whole, yeah. The so visceral, so just like, and it was the first to really be in that style. Go ahead.
I have a question. If that's not your favorite World War II movie, what is your favorite World War II movie?
Fury.
Oh.
Fury's really good.
Solid.
Fury right. is like, Fury was like, I liked Fury because it did, while Saving Private Ryan kind of didn't like really romanticize it too much, there was a little bit of like the romantic element of war to it or whatever. And like Fury's just like pure destruction and mayhem and like, you know what I mean? Like it's just chaos. And it just showed that way. Well, Daryl, go ahead. Greg, you have your hand up, sir.
I am making a confession and a moment of repentance on this podcast tonight. I've never seen Saving Private Ryan.
He's frozen. Oh, wow.
I will.
How?
Oh my
how?
God.
Dude, how?
I will.
How? It's not even like if you're like, no, I haven't seen like a couple of John Wick movies. Like, I understand they're like a little bit new. Dude, that movie's been out for like three decades or something. I don't even know. It came out, what, 2001?
I know.
What are you doing, bro?
I will correct this week. Before the next pod, I will correct this and I will watch it. That's what I'm trying to be transparent,
Troy,
and confess
and
repent.
Can you be my brother, Troy? Troy, can you be my brother?
Yeah, I'd love to. Like, I'd love to. I need a best friend. Like, I need.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so go. This we took too long on this. Go number four, Jared.
Number four, 300. Like the first fight scene. I know it's a little cheesy and stuff, but like the speech he gets.
But
he likes. Now number three, Black Hawk Down, and specifically like the whole movie as a whole is crazy. But I'm gonna go the scene where they're like the Durant, the pilot is like his helicopter goes down, and the snipers are like permission to go in, and they go in, and like they make the ultimate sacrifice. Emotional scene, hard hitting scene, very good action, just. Chef's kiss. That was my number three. Okay, number. This is gonna be tough. So I'm number two. Okay, I'm gonna go number two. John Wick for the top down fight scene in John Wick 4.
Yeah.
Just absolutely like, I remember messaging. I think I messaged you guys after I saw it.
You did.
I
was like, 100% you did. Yes. Yeah. I remember. Whenever I put this together, my thought process was like, I know Jared's putting that on his top five. I know 100% that he is.
Dude, it's just so different. So good. But my number one, and this is because Daryl can even confess or can verify this. I watched this as a child like a million times.
We both did.
Top Gun, the final dogfight in the original Top Gun, when Maverick's re-engaging and all that. It's like cheesy 80s, but it's like, dude, it's so good. It's so good. I can turn it on right now and still be hyped. So, Troy, your top five, buddy.
All right. I just had to adjust mine a little bit. So my number five was the Avengers Endgame final battle. I had to push it out just because of all the pomp and circumstance and everything that went on. Like, you could, there will never be a moment when watching in the theaters like that again with everybody the same way. I'm just glad I was able to experience that.
100%.
So my true number five is your honorable mention, Daryl, is Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, Helm's Deep battle, all of that. And then Gandalf coming in at the end.
Yeah. Woo! So good.
My number four is, Jared, one of yours would be Saving Private Ryan, D-Day, the Normandy Beach scene. It's just absolutely crazy, and there's really not a whole lot like it. Three. Okay, so my list is a little weird. My number three is the Matrix lobby scene. Probably one of my favorite action movies of all time, if not my favorite action movie of all time. There's so many, like, the bullet time moments in it and everything, like, you're blown away the first time you saw it in 99. Yeah. Like, it's incredible. My number two is one you guys, my two and one you guys have not talked about, is Braveheart. My number two, the first big battle scene where he's like cheering everybody on. He's like, they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And then they clash and the brutality of that. Oh,
yeah. Oh, it's a good one.
That is my favorite movie of all time.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. Okay.
Braveheart is my number one movie of all time. My number one is I'm going into my nerddom now. Okay.
Oh boy.
This franchise is my childhood franchise, is my kid's childhood now. We live and breathe Star Wars. We live and breathe it all day, every day. Y'all are old enough to remember when Phantom Menace came out.
Yep.
The lines
were
hours long. You had to get there. It wasn't like midnight showings now. You had to get there 6, 8, 10 hours early to get a seat, right? Yep. Every single screen was Phantom Menace in the theater. Every single screen.
Yes.
Disregard that the movie sucked, right? The fight scene, Duel of Fates, when Darth Maul comes out with a double lightsaber...
Yes.
Against Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, I literally saw myself from above. Like, it just was an existential moment.
That
I will never forget in my life.
I really wrestled with that one not being in my top five as well, Troy.
Troy, here's the thing. What makes movies better? Imagine that Jar Jar Binks is a secret Sith Lord.
It doesn't make it better. My son tries to tell me this crap all the time, and I'm not having it. But like this is how much we live and breathe. My son and I are playing a card game all the time. That's Star Wars. We're watching through Star Wars Bad Batch. My youngest we just got done watching through all the movies. Like, I'm actually reading a Star Wars novel right now in my spare time. Like, we live and breathe Star Wars.
Really quick, by the way, I did find this funny. Because I love Star Wars over here. Well, okay, I love the first six movies, but there's been a bunch of stuff about people trying to say that Dune stole from Star Wars, and I'm like, actually,
it's the other way. Yeah,
George Lucas stole that from Dune, but which, by the way, Dune 2, I don't know. I like I almost wanted to put it on here because it's just so fresh, but it's like, I have to, as far as a sci-fi movie, action movie or whatever, Dune 2's got to be up there. Like, Dune Part 2 has to be way up there.
It's really good. But here's the thing. I can't put Dune 2 in a list without Dune 1. It's a 5.5 hour long movie. That's what it is. It's not just...
Dune. Okay, here's an honorable mention, and we can wrap this up or whatever. The scene where, I can't remember his name, Momoa's character, when he has the fight in the hallway.
Yeah, 100%. That unbelievable.
That was a great fight scene. So
yes.
Dude, it was jarring because I just watched Dune and Dune 2 and all that stuff. Last night, Jason and I watched Aquaman 2, and it's just crap. It's not good.
All the Aquamans are not awesome. The first one, but they're not great.
Yeah.
They're not. I just knew that one of you would put something Game of Thrones in there as well. I just knew that there
would be a show.
This was action movies. This was action movies.
Okay. All right. I'm with you. I understand.
Action shows, I think that list would be harder because some of the quality in a lot of shows are not nearly to the
movie. Level. I agree with
recently,
that.
Recently, they're okay. Here's one thought, and we can take this offline. But my favorite action scene of a TV series would be Daredevil season one, the hallway fight scene. That's one clip.
I never saw Daredevil.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Daredevil's the best one on TV.
Yeah, Troy is a big defender of the one and only Daredevil. So this was good, Troy. We've missed the top five. See? It brings some good discussion out. I like this. I don't think we'll be nearly as impassioned in the future because we all really love action movies. So I think we won't take as long to get through our top fives moving forward. But I don't know what is happening on your end.
Yeah, you're dial up. I can hear your modem in the background. But anyways, you're fine. No, we definitely need to bring this back. This is a good segment. So Troy, I tell you, you got to be on the pod every time from now on. So
All right. Sure. So next top five is how we eat our eggs. Our favorite way we eat our eggs.
I'm just coming up with five ways to eat my eggs.
I was about to say, Lord. So
it's like on a burger count or something. Like,
yeah, it does actually. Yeah. Good way. No.
Well, again, this has been our podcast. We'd love for you to like, subscribe, leave a 5-star review and a comment. It would mean a lot to us. And so we hope that you will. But no, regardless if you do or don't, we're having a great time. And we hope that you are too. I'm Daryl. That's Jared. That's Troy. And we will talk to you guys later.
Bye, Baker.
Cha-ching, a thunder money ball.
You can unhitch the wagon. Put the ponies in the ball.